show we have to kick off this Monday. It's Scotty Scheffler's world, and we're watching greatness. After winning the PGA Tour's flagship event, Players Champ, once again world number one. What makes him such a special player? We're going to hear from his team, plus how Jordan Spieth is now using Scheffler as a measuring stick, coming up on this Monday edition of Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Scotty, you beat one of the strongest fields in golf on this treasure of a golf course, a golf course designed by Pete and Alice Dye and Dean Beeman. And your skills were on display throughout the week. And I think it's both fitting and impressive that our 2022 PGA Tour Player of the Year is now our 2023 Players Champion. Now, Scotty, to you, to your caddy and partner, Ted Scott, to your entire family, congratulations on this awesome accomplishment. We're proud to call you the Players Champion.
Scotty Scheffler picking up right where he left off a season ago, the 2023 Players Champion with all four rounds in the 60s. That helped propel him to a five-shot victory and join some very elite company. Guys who have won the Players and the Masters within a 12-month span. Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and there's now a third at that table, Scotty Scheffler. So with that, hello and welcome into Golf Today. I'm George Savarikas, pleased to be sitting alongside Golf Week columnist Eamon Lynch. What a week that was with all the hype coming into it, the type of leaderboard we were going to see, and who emerges but Scotty Scheffler, and he does it in commanding fashion, winning by five.
And seeing him on that graphic with Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods speaks to what motivates Scotty Scheffler. And how telling is it, George, with all of this talk we've had for so long, even last week, about how much reward exists in this game financially, that the biggest check in the history of the PGA Tour goes to the guy for whom it probably means least?
Who's the most probably unaffected by it. I'm excited with where Scotty Scheffler is at now with world number one. A month ago, pre-Phoenix Open, we were saying, okay, Rory and Jon Rahm have separated themselves. Scotty Scheffler was still in that big three, but those were the guys who had ripped off three wins in seven worldwide starts and four wins, seven worldwide starts for Rahm. And all of a sudden, Scotty Scheffler says, hey, it's Scheffler season. Don't forget about me. And now he has a little gap between those two guys.
It's starting to feel like a Formula One race here where one guy steps on the gas 1 week, one guy runs out of gas a little bit early this week as Rory McIlroy did. But really, you can argue there are three guys who have separated themselves from the rest of the tour at this point. They just seem to separate themselves from each other week to week as well.
All right, let's welcome in now Golf Channel's Paige McKenzie, third member of our team today on Golf Today. Paige, what was your biggest takeaway from the Players?
Well, I think you made a great point. When Scotty Scheffler was teeing it up at Waste Management or WM Phoenix Open, he was the least talked about guy as the defending champion. But it's been an incredible stretch of golf. He won in a different fashion yesterday, which I appreciated. Strength off of the tee, certainly aggressive style of play, which to me was fun. And usually in a runaway victory, you don't have as much action as I felt like we saw yesterday with Scotty Scheffler.
100%. Let's take a look at the final round highlights for anyone who may have missed how the 49th edition of the Players came to a close. Scotty Scheffler, par 3 third.
Yeesh. And after Min Woo had birdied the first hole, all of a sudden that two-shot lead evaporated.
Scheffler now two up, par 3 8th, his second.
Yeah, this was an incredible little pitch that started what was a tremendous run.
That was birdie number one on the scorecard. Scheffler even through eight, and here's where you're thinking, okay, his guys are going in reverse. Scotty could open things up. Par 5, ninth.
Yeah, and showing some depth touch. We talk so much about he's a tall, powerful player, has obviously strength off the tee, but we saw some serious touch around the greens, both on eight and on the ninth.
On the 10th, and you see that 12-under number from Tyrrell Hatton already posted. He had that final round 65. Scheffler to make it three in a row.
The pedal Yeah, kept the pedal down, George. This stretch of golf was really fun to watch him be able to take advantage of different strengths of his game. And the 11th, no different, this par 5, only 259 yards remaining into this green, and just an iron.
Just an iron, huh? Just another two-putt birdie to make it four in a row. Eamon, how about this on the par 4 12th? It's Scheffler's carrying a five-shot lead at this point and taking three wood off the tee to just slam it shut.
Well, he's really playing to his strengths here, right? This is the hole where Max Homa hit the flag and almost ended up in the water, but this is about as safe a birdie as you can make from Scottie Scheffler.
Total it up. Birdies at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Paige, we go to the par 3 17th. Last real potential for disaster.
And that's, I think everybody was holding their breath, including Scotty. When that ball was in the air, everyone complaining about how difficult the wind was to judge. That judged very nice.
Scheffler would go on to make par there. Got his grandma and family on hand every step of the way to watch him. On the 18th, blew his tee shot way right, gets it up on the green. This for par and around a 69. You can see how meaningful it was for Scheffler to roll in that last par putt, the fist pump, a five-shot rout at the players. Final leaderboard. Tyrrell Hatton had some separation, solo second. Nice payday with that final round 65. Tom Hoagie, Victor Hovland, T3. Minwoo Lee, who was in that final group, Sunday 76, T6 finish. That's his best in his PGA Tour career. Afterwards, the champ, Scottie Scheffler, speaking with Todd Lewis.
Prior to today's round, we chatted last night. You know, you were the favorite. You're a major champion. You've been number one in the world. The other top 10 guys do not have the experience. But that can come with a weight, a heaviness, because you're supposed to win. How did you manage that?
Yeah, I'd say it was probably a little bit of a different feeling because I was kind of the guy on the leaderboard that was supposed to win. I would probably say last year's Masters, I'm sure, you know, some people weren't expecting me to finish it off mm-hmm. like I did. This year, I think it was kind of more of, it was just a little bit different. But at the end of the day, you just got to go out there and hit the shots. I had a two-shot lead going into today, and I just tried to stay patient and build on that lead and just try and execute shots.
Did you feel calm this morning prior to the round?
I was calm-ish. I definitely got nervous. It's the Players' Championship. I mean, it's our tournament. It's the one that we all want to win. And to have an opportunity like I did going into today, it was definitely a little bit nervous. But, just try to manage it and went out there and had a great day.
Was your game plan or strategy with the lead any different than it was in any other round?
No. There's a reason I had built up the lead. It was because I was playing the golf course well, and my mental approach was appropriate, and so didn't want to change anything going into today and just stick with our routine and continue to plot our way around the golf course like we have been. And Teddy was huge once again today, and we both did a great job just managing our way around and hitting the right shots. And I mean, it was challenging with the high winds. I mean, Teddy pretty much nailed all his numbers, and did such a good job.
What were your emotions as you walked up 18, knowing you were gonna be the Players' Champion?
I mean, I was pretty tired.
That's not an emotion.
But, yeah. No, I'm just grateful. Those walks are really special. It was a lot of fun for Teddy and I to get to enjoy that moment together. And it's so special walking up kind of knowing that you have the tournament in hand. And fortunately, I one putted this time instead of four putting, which was more fun.
You're a six-time winner on the PGA Tour. You're a major champion, a Masters champion. Now you're a Players' Champion. The best of this tour. How impactful is that to you?
I mean, it's really special. I'll always be able to look back on my career now and say that I won the Masters and I won the Players. It's not going away. It's a special tournament and so much history with our tour. It's our tournament. It's our tour, and I'm just proud to be the champion this year.
Scotty, as you look back from the beginning of last year, prior to you winning in Phoenix and starting this magical run, to where you are now, in your mind, where have you grown as a player and as a person?
Gosh, that's a good question. I've never been good at evaluating myself, but I think I've just learned a lot of patience over time. I'd probably say that's the most important. I think out here on the golf course, you have to be patient. You have to learn to work your way around the golf course. And in life, you got to be patient too. You're going to kind of ride the wave of good times and bad times. And it's been a very, very fun last 13, 14 months. And hoping to continue to go like this in my career. But we'll see what happens. I don't like to look too far into the future. I'm just going to go home and celebrate tonight and go from there.
Players who moved to world number one with a win this season, and it's been spin the roulette wheel, and who's going to land at world number one? Rory McIlroy. Remember the CJ Cup last fall? Then it was Scottie Scheffler, WM Phoenix Open. Very next week, John Rahm says, all right, I'll take that after the Genesis Invitational a couple weeks later at RIV, and then it's Scottie Scheffler once again after winning the Players. So let's do a deeper dive on the victory that was for Scottie Scheffler. Paige, heard you say it was a different style of play that Scottie Scheffler used. Explain.
I don't know if it was a different style. It was certainly a different result, even though both were wins when I compare it to the WM Phoenix Open. In that win earlier this year, he played the game that he sought out, the way that he put his plan together. To me, that was what was most exciting and most fun. You didn't see a defensive style of play coming down the stretch, even though he had a large lead.
And here's where I think perception and reality with Scottie Scheffler are a little skewed because of his demeanor. Externally, people say, oh, it's kind of boring golf. But if you actually look at how aggressive he is and with his short game, he is magical.
He had taken all of the pressure off of himself before he got to the most combustible holes out there over the back nine. And it was interesting, some of the comments he made after the victory yesterday. He talked about how he goes out there every day with a very simple goal of just trying to get incrementally better as a golfer than the day he was before. And all of the numbers back him up, George. If you go back and look at pretty much every statistical category of Scottie Scheffler 2 years ago when he didn't have any win on the tour, he is a measurably better performer on the PGA Tour in every single one of those categories right now. And he just seems to have the right attitude for a course like TPC Sawgrass, which can be fairly corrosive to a guy's psyche as you work your way around there. In fairness, Tyrrell Hatton's about as opposite to Scottie Scheffler as you can get, and he finished second.
We saw a smile out of Tyrrell Hatton.
Well, if you went from making what Tyrrell looked like he was going to make to what he did make, you'd be smiling pretty hard too. But to me, that was just a classic Scottie Scheffler win. It's that he's so even-keeled, and that when the moment arose in which something was expected of him, when the opportunity arose to separate himself from the field, he took that opportunity.
And we've seen that the last 13 months. We're witnessing greatness with Scottie Scheffler. He has 6 wins on the PGA Tour in that span. Once again, he's world number one, yet the hype around him hasn't reached the levels that we've seen with Rory, Rahm, Spieth, among others. Scheffler's the next American superstar, but the decibel level around him seems to pale in comparison to what we saw with fellow Texan Jordan Spieth back in 2015. The two are intertwined. Call Scheffler version 2.0. Two Dallas kids. Spieth, 29 years old, always setting the benchmark for the 26-year-old Scheffler. Jordan won 2 U.S. Junior Amateurs, 2009 and 2011. Scheffler won his junior 2 years later. That was in 2013. Spieth made his PGA Tour debut as a 16-year-old. AT&T Byron Nelson in 2010 made the cut, finished T16. Scheffler, same tournament 4 years later as his 17-year-old, made the cut, finished T22. Spieth then goes to Texas, helps the Longhorns win a national title. Scheffler follows him to UT. They were national title runner-ups. Spieth, PGA Tour Rookie of the Year in 2013. Scheffler, PGA Tour Rookie of the Year in 2020. Spieth's third season on the PGA Tour, 5 wins, 2 majors, PGA Tour Player of the Year. Scheffler's third season, PGA Tour Player of the Year, 4 wins and a major. With Spieth, you're on the edge of your seat. It could be the most incredible shot you've ever seen, or a car crash, or both on the same hole. He is must-see TV when he's in contention. He's one of the few guys on the PGA Tour who moves the needle. Scheffler should be next. He has all the shots with a magical short game. He's the unassuming assassin who will smile you to death and pick you apart as a ruthless competitor. What makes Scheffler special? He's one of us, just as happy beating up on his buddies and winning a money game back home than going to Chipotle as he is cashing in on one of the game's biggest paydays, $4.5 mil at the Players. I was talking to a pro late last summer about guys potentially going to live for big paydays, and then Scottie Scheffler's name came up. And the pro just laughed. He said, what did Scheffler make? $14 million last season? That could last Scottie 2 lifetimes. Fame and fortune haven't changed the man. From Phoenix to Augusta last year, Scheffler, 4 wins in 6 starts. We're in that stretch now. He has 4 wins his last 2 starts. Scheffler hoping to win back-to-back green jackets and maybe back-to-back PGA Tour Player of the Year awards. The last guy to do both, Tiger Woods. So Spieth knows watching Scheffler, you are witnessing greatness.
Tee to green, he's as good as he's ever been right now. And with some flair and some stuff around the greens and making some putts, he's a guy that's hard to beat. I play against him a lot at home, and consistently he's shooting really low rounds. And when I feel like I get the better of him, it's a boost of confidence right now because he's arguably the best player in the world right now. He and John and Rory have, I guess you guys have all written about how that change has gone down, but it's easy to say right now that I consider him the best in the world. How did the current situation?
So what we're starting to see with Scottie Scheffler inside the ropes, if he gets anywhere near to what he did last season, I think the hype is going to start to follow him.
One would hope that the hype would follow him and should have actually followed him to this point already. I guess it is because he is so flatlined as a personality out there that you don't see that kind of hype around him the way you do with Jordan Spieth. But it's always interesting to me to watch a guy who is not unfazed either by his own success or by the expectations that success brings. I don't think that's true of Jordan Spieth. He had a certain haunted look for a few years because the rise was so meteoric, that Hall of Fame season in 2015. And that's an awfully high bar to be measured against all the time, especially when you're that young. He was only 22 when he had that success. But Scottie Scheffler, to me, looks like a guy who is so utterly comfortable in his own skin. You know, people talked a lot about that scene in the Netflix show Full Swing where Koepka seemed haunted by all of the things that were going away from him. The swing, the body was getting away from him, and he was just awestruck at how Scottie Scheffler just seemed to cruise through life with no doubts, no issues, no fears, no insecurities. That's the kind of guy who has a long, successful career on the PGA Tour. Not much scar tissue there.
That's a guy, to your point, who has staying power, not just on the PGA Tour, but among the upper echelon on the PGA Tour. We're seeing that now with Scottie Scheffler, and we're just getting started. More on the world number one later in the show. We're going to hear from his team on what makes him great. That's ahead on Golf Today. But this roller coaster of a week for Tom Hoagie opened with a 6-over 78. Second round, 68, and he makes the cut. And then a Saturday for the ages on the stadium course at TPC Sawgrass does something that had never been done before. That's card the lowest round ever on this Peak Dye design, a 10 under 62. Hoagie winds up finishing T3 for the week. You see the tournament course records, previous players who had a share of 63. A lot of big names, Fred Couples, Greg Norman, Martin Keimer, Webb Simpson, Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, a couple other names on that list, Roberto Castro, and this was the reaction from Colt Knost.
No! He made it.
He missed it?
No, he made it.
Oh, he made it. Oh, Colt. Cool.
Golf history, it's over, guys. 10 under,
oh, shed a tear for Colt.
Yeah, we're poor little out for Colt as he is erased from the record books. This is from Roberto Castro. I turned to my daughters and said, I have you girls in this record. That's all I have left. And then watch Tom Hoagie roll in that 10-footer. And this really crystallizes the week from Tom Hoagie. From Doug Ferguson, the AP writer. You read it. Tom Hoagie is going to pick up about 1.3 mil and fly home to Fort Worth, coach. That's just Hoagie. Hoagie's reply, hashtag 21C. At least he had an aisle seat. And the purse payouts for the top five at the Players, and we shortchanged Tom Hoagie. It wasn't 1.3, it was 1.475. Tyrrell Hatton, 2.7. Hideki Matsuyama, over a mil for fifth. Time now for winners who didn't win. So, Eamon, fittingly, let's start with you.
There are a couple of ways to decide who was winners and who were losers in this respect, George, particularly when a purse is $25 million. I want to take a look at the consequences of some of the shots that you actually saw out there yesterday and what it actually meant for those individuals. Tyrrell Hatton's a good one to start with. Those five birdies to end his round, that added $2.2 million to his check for the day. Tom Hoagie, he missed that putt on the last hole yesterday, which would have given him solo third. It was worth $250,000. And then the disasters at 17. Cam Smith lost almost $600,000. And poor Taylor Montgomery, 16, 17. He played five over, cost him almost $900,000.
That's where you can drive yourself into a straitjacket. If you're a pro golfer and you start thinking of, if I did this or that, how much did it cost me? How much did I make? If you had to pick just one, who are you going with?
I got to go with David Lingmerth because he just had a top 10 at the Honda a couple of weeks ago. He finished T6 this week. It's hard to explain just the pit of despair David Lingmerth was in after he won the Memorial back in 2015. He'd been in the mix here actually 10 years ago with Tiger Woods and Sergio Garcia at the Players. But he went from the 2017 British Masters on the DP World Tour until the Mayakoba tournament on the PGA Tour last fall without a single top 10. He actually ended 2020 at 1,204 in the world, having been as high as 35. Starting to find his game again. He lives locally. He said he didn't even go to the tournament for 5 years. It was too painful, given the state his game was in, to even show up there as a spectator. He walked away yesterday, keeping the theme of money going, $736,000. That's more than he earned the last four seasons combined on the PGA Tour.
That would be the hardest thing as a pro. You can't go watch those guys tee it up. You feel like you should be in the field. It's got to be out of sight, out of mind. A player who catapulted on our radar, big personality, Minwoo Lee. Disappointing final round with that 4-over 76. Feel like American golf fans finally got a taste of what his personality is like. Two-time DP World Tour winner, won the Scottish a couple years ago over Thomas Dietrich and Matt Fitzpatrick. And you look at the finish that Minwoo Lee had, while it was a lost Sunday, did make birdies on 16 and 17. It's his best career finish on the PGA Tour. T6 finish. He's obviously known as the brother of Minji Lee. But now, next week, he has a tee time at the Valspar Championship. He's top 50 in the world. He needs a two-way tie for 15th or better to get special temporary membership. I think with his love for engaging with the crowd in the gallery, he's a personality that is going to win a ton of fans over here, and we're going to see a lot of him this season on the PGA Tour and going forward because he has a ton of game, and now he's going to know how his body reacts to being in those pressure situations in the final group with the world number one. Paige, who's your winner who didn't win?
Both of you kind of have a nice, helpful segue to where I was looking, and that was at Eric Cole. You remember runner-up, lost in the playoff at the Honda Classic just 2 weeks ago. A 34-year-old rookie used some of that experience and had a great weekend this weekend at the Players. But the weekend wouldn't have happened if it weren't for a special hole on that second round. Number 16, he ended up eagling the 16th. In order to make the cut on the number. Then he had one of the best weekends of anybody. This weekend shot 69, 68, 137. Only six players bested him on the weekend. So was able to parlay a great week at the Honda Classic, got him into the event, took advantage of an eagle on 16 to have a great weekend. Finished tied for 27th at the Players. So just somebody I was keeping my eye on, given you just get those starts, you get those opportunities and able to take advantage of it. And that was a good weekend for Eric Cole.
Yeah, he's a guy now who has already locked up his card for the PGA Tour next season. And now he's comfortably inside that top 70. Maybe he might have an eye towards Eastlake if he keeps this run going at this part of the season.
And all three of these guys represent those kind of fairy tale stories in that professional golf throws up, and we hope that the new system going forward with the various pathways into these designated events actually keeps those fairy tale stories alive. Well, we've heard from the man out front, but what about the guys who make up the rest of Team Scheffler? We'll hear from his swing coach, Randy Smith, and his caddy, Ted Scott, coming up after the break.
Continuing on golf today, time now for Winning Moments presented by Wing Grips. Scottie Scheffler decided to close things out in style at the Players. Hard putt on the last, all four rounds in the 60s, five shot victory. Scheffler returning to number one once again in the official world golf ranking. That's his second win this season. Remember, last year, through the playoffs, also had 2 wins, part of that run where he had 4 wins in 6 starts. Scheffler's PGA Tour wins, I mentioned that run last year, was WM Phoenix Open to Bay Hill. Then he won the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play, where Scotty's heading this week to defend his title. And, oh, yeah, he slipped off the green jacket. Scheffler's team, swing coach Randy Smith, caddy Ted Scott on what are the ingredients that make him the number one player in the world.
He's got so much feel, and the beauty of it is how much he enjoys playing. He's having fun doing that. It could be here. It could be with his guys back home. He enjoys hitting shots and seeing what he created, you know, and if it matches what he saw. So, you know, yeah, he's about as complete as I've ever seen.
Yeah. Why does he seem to play well in all kinds of different
ways? Because he's more of an artist, you know. You give him this canvas, he's going to paint on it. You give him this canvas, he wants to paint on it. And that's the thing. He's not a one-dimensional player. He's not just a highball player. You know, there's been some times where he's played some courses at the Open Championship where nobody believes how low this kid can hit a golf ball. And I mean low controlled. And he enjoys doing it, you know. Look at that. That was sick. You know, that kind of attitude right there goes back to the enjoyment, you know, that he has playing the game.
What does Scotty show you today?
Heart. I mean, the guy is tough. You know, this is a big stage, tough golf course, wind blowing everywhere. I mean, you can very quickly get off the rails here, and he didn't, you know, and that just shows how good he is physically at the game, how good he is mentally at the game. It's impressive. I mean, this is a course that can punish you very quickly.
Why does he play well on so many different style golf courses?
Straight hitter, so he can curve it both ways into the wind, you know, to hold it. So it's probably easier to find fairways. And he doesn't have a weakness, you know. I mean, he's a great putter, chipper, wedge player, drives the ball far, hits it straight, great iron player. It's like, what does he not do really well? You know, I think I'm the only hole in his game, so I'm trying not to be that hole. But, yeah, he's a pretty incredible golfer.
Why do you guys work so well together?
You have to ask him that. I don't know. As a caddy, I wonder sometimes why great players would want me to work for them, you know, because there's so many great caddies out there, and I'm very humbled to be a part of this team. And, you know, I don't really know why he wants to work with me, but I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, those two have been on quite the run together. Let's welcome in Todd Lewis, who is at the Players all week, reporting on live from the Players. Todd, how are you holding up after that stretch of TPC Sawgrass?
I'm good. We had a Sunday finish, so, you know, unlike last year, it was awesome.
That is the biggest win in the business, is when we're done, right? A Sunday finish. And Scotty, I mean, he snuffed out all the drama. We were hearing from his team on what makes him such a special player. What do you think makes Scotty an elite player?
Well, mechanically, just like Ted Scott was saying, he has all the shots. I mean, you look at what he's done statistically, number one on the tour in strokes gained tee to green, number one on the tour in strokes gained off the tee. He leads the tour in greens at regulation. He's a clutch putter. He's got incredible hands. So mechanically, that foundation that Randy Smith built with him since he was 7 years of age really suits him. But I think more than anything, to touch on what Eamon was talking about earlier, he is probably the most secure player on the PGA Tour. You know, I've heard players say to me, the great golfers are the ones that play their best when they're at their worst. Now, Scotty's worst game is probably better than some of the best games for some players on the PGA Tour. But when he hits an errant shot or he gets himself in a bit of trouble, there is no panic. There is security and confidence. There is the next shot, and I think that is built from a great family, a great supporting wife who is encouraging, also a very supporting caddy in Ted Scott. I mean, he just has a beautiful, calm foundation of nothing rattling him. So, I mean, like, if I'm on a plane and for whatever reason the cockpit gets overtaken by carbon monoxide, and somebody needs to land that plane, please hand the reins to Scotty Scheffler, because he's going to land it calmly, cool, you know, relaxing without any issues. So that's what I like about him.
I'd probably go Maverick McNeely number one in that hypothetical, but then Scotty Scheffler number two.
And certainly not Tyrrell Hatton number three in that scenario.
No.
Todd, we've seen players of this ilk get on hot runs before. You know, we've seen it with Jason Day over the years and Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth. Yep. Life can get complicated outside of the ropes and inside the ropes. You know, injuries, self-doubt, all of these things. Do you see, to Ted Scott's point earlier, do you see any weakness at all or any cause for concern that something someday might become a pothole for Scottie Scheffler?
Well, Eamon, we've been covering this game. There's going to be something that's going to be a speed bump in his career. It's not going to be perfect throughout his career. It's just a matter of how he handles it. You mentioned Jordan Spieth. He nearly won every major championship in 2015. I mean, I was amazed at his play and felt like there's no way this guy is going to fall off the grid, but he kind of did. And that's golf, and that's nothing against Jordan Spieth. But it took him a while to rebound and handle that. I just think that Scotty has the great calmness and presence of mind and incredible support team that when he has a bit of a valley, I think he can recover quickly. I mean, you know, Tiger's the most mentally strong person I've ever covered or worked with. And I'm not saying he is Tiger, but he's incredibly strong in a different kind of way. And his strength comes from comfort of who he is. And I think that's going to carry him a long, long way.
Todd, what do you think will need to happen for the hype around Scottie Scheffler to level out with his achievement over the last 13 months?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, he's not the flashy type. He's not a fist pumper screaming. He's not like Rory saying, come on. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. I think that all of those characters are wonderful for the game of golf. But I don't really necessarily think it's something that has to happen. I mean, I can promise you Scottie Scheffler would rather have more wins than more notoriety. There's no doubt about it. It's not important to him. The thing I like about him, and I said this on Live from last week, yes, it's important for him to be great at his craft. He is living the dream of playing the game he loves. But it's not the most important. It doesn't define him, according to Scottie Scheffler. It's more critical for him to be a great person and a great husband, and I think that's why he's going to have longevity.
Todd, there were a lot of storylines last week, including some unfamiliar names coming up on the leaderboard that we haven't heard from in a while. There was also all the chatter outside of the ropes about all the changes on the PGA Tour. What made the most impression on you in terms of those storylines outside of Scottie Scheffler?
Well, there were some, I heard you guys talking about winners who didn't win. And, you know, I want to throw Jerry Kelly in there, the oldest to make the cut at the Players. I thought he had a great week, obviously. And Justin Rose told me, I mean, he had a top 10 finish. He said he played better at the Players than he did when he won at Pebble. And Minwoo Lee, I think he is erupting on the world stage. He is a DP World Tour member. He's not a PGA Tour member, but he shot 76 in the final group, but that's the biggest stage he's been a part of. He's young, he's 24, and he's gonna grow from that. But, you know, I do, and Eamon, you were right in the middle of this too here. I mean, there still is a divide out here on the PGA Tour in regards to these no-cut designated events. I was taken aback when the tour offered up a players meeting last Tuesday to everyone to put all the stats out in front of players to inform them to answer questions that only like 40 or 50 players showed up for that meeting. That's less than half the field. And so, you know, some of these players are already disgusted. They didn't want to show up because they felt like it wasn't worth their time. I still think there is quite an undercurrent of a resentment from some of these players. But, you know, we'll see how this develops over the few weeks and months.
And, Todd, I think some of the no-shows were guys who thought it's already been rubber stamped. What can I do now if it's already a done deal?
Well, yes, but at the same time, I feel like if I talked to several players, and Eamon, I know you were there, maybe you did too, who felt that way, but decided to go to the meeting anyway. But once they were given the information, were given all the analytics, you know, left that room feeling better about the direction the tour is going and were more optimistic. I'm not saying that, you know, you're going to change everybody's mind, but I feel as if you should get as much information as possible if you're going to formulate an opinion. And And some players just opted not to do that.
Yeah, always helpful to be informed. That's why we have Todd Lewis stopping by the show on golf today.
Well, you have low standards.
At least we could exceed them with regularity. Still to come, the 17th delivers every single year. The highs, there were a lot of them this past week, and the lows from the Island Green. When we return, that's coming up on the other side of the short break. Moving along to the Island Green, par 3, 17th, the highs and lows, the amazing moments that we saw at the 49th edition of the Players. Let's take a look at some of the moments. And Paige, it was amazing seeing the oscillation between the 17th playing as a layup and a brutal hole. And right on the gates Thursday morning, Hayden Buckley.
It was a great way to start the broadcast.
Live from the Players, 3 minutes into it.
Was it the first group or second group? Second group through 17, if I'm not mistaken.
First group live on the show, Hayden Buckley, ace, Tyrrell Hatton. This was the second round, par 3, 17th.
Good. Cool.
Amazing the clarity that the mics can pick up. Not just off the plank, but then into the water. Aaron Rye, Saturday. How about this scene? Such an accessible hole location. Bottom of the cup.
The caddy, I think, was more excited than Aaron.
Rye made a huge move on Saturday into the top 10. Chad Ramey. He had a two-shot lead at this point in the second round.
It looked good for a minute. Just cruel to that back hole location.
Cruel would be this drop area for his third. It's the downslope into the water, wound up making quad. But Ramey showing some resolve, steadying himself into the weekend to wind up with a solid performance. Ben Griffin in the bunker on 16. Whew, on 17, pardon me.
Get a little adrenaline boost when you hear all those voices as well.
Taylor Montgomery in the water off the tee, but he passed that walkway, so drops his third there. Disaster.
Brutal. I think Eamon cataloged just how costly some of these shots were.
Russell Henley from the front of the green on 17 to this back right hole location. Buckets. And we can't leave out the last hole in one that we saw. Alex Smalley, final round, one hop, drop. We were completely spoiled this week to have three aces on the par 3 17th. How the hole played for the week, three hole in ones, it's the first time in Players history multiple aces were carded. And instead of two, we said, why not stop the party with two? Let's go to three. The scoring average, 3.13, was 57 over, 39 players, double bogey or worse.
Well, a little over a year ago, Scottie Scheffler didn't have any wins on the PGA Tour. Now he's like a lot of the fans around the 17th hole, George. He's got a six-pack. When we come back, we'll have more on how Scottie Scheffler got it done at TPC Sawgrass.
We're talking liquid.
It's a Texas two-step. On golf today, Scottie Scheffler now has a Players' Championship to go with his green jacket. We'll hear from the new world number one on exactly how he got it done. And speaking of Texans who know a little something about winning at TPC Sawgrass, it's been 25 years since Justin Leonard's comeback victory at the Players. He'll be here to talk about how much has changed in that quarter century. Golf Today continues.
Golf Today.
George Savarikas, Eamon Lynch. Scotty Scheffler's final round highlights in 60 seconds or less. Got started on the birdie train, par 3, 8th.
You heard Paige McKenzie talk about the short game magic, and we saw plenty of it yesterday, George.
Scheffler birdied the 9th. Why not make it a hat trick here on the 10th?
And this is where he really began to separate himself. The lead up to 4.
Birdies on 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. We go up to the 18th. Scheffler to par the last and win by not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, but 5.
That's what they call a statement.
One final look at the leaderboard. The 49th edition of the Players. Done and dusted. Scheffler, the margin 5 over Tyrrell Hatton. Rounded the day with that 7 under 65 for Hatton. Solo second, Tom Hoagie, Victor Hovland, T3. Afterwards, the champ, Scotty Scheffler, and newly minted world number one, speaking with our guy, Damon Hack.
Scotty, considering where you won, how you played, your family here, and who you beat, why is this one special?
It's a lot of fun. Long day, tough day. I knew the conditions were going to get really hard late, and I did a really good job of staying patient and not trying to force things. And then I got hot kind of the middle of the round and, tried to put things away as quickly as I could.
You have detailed the challenges of sleeping on a lead and playing with a lead. What was the toughest aspect of this Sunday?
Probably this morning, I'd say. I actually slept amazing last night. I was pretty tired after a long day yesterday. Unfortunately, I slept pretty good. But, it's fun.
Say. 4 wins last year in Player of the Year, 2 wins already this season. In what ways are you a better player, a different player now?
I'm not really sure. I'm just hoping to improve. I'm just trying to get a little bit better at a time, not overthink things. And I'm just so fortunate to be able to see some results and enjoy some wins. And I'm very thankful.
I'm seeing some moist eyes. What's it like having the family here, including your grandmother, watching you hole by hole, step by step?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I don't know what to say. Look at my dad staring at me, making it so much harder. But, it's pretty special. You know, they haven't been able to come out in a while. We got a newborn nephew who's about 9 months old, and so he's doing well. He's out here somewhere, I think. He's around, so he's probably hiding me asleep. But it's been a lot of fun to have the whole family out this week, and we're gonna go celebrate.
Players champ and number one again. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Pretty amazing. Since Scotty Scheffler was able to shed the moniker of best player on the PGA Tour without a win at the 2022 WM Phoenix Open, all he's done is stack up the most wins on tour, this dating back to the beginning of last season. He has 6. Then you see that trio with Max Homa, Rory McIlroy, Jon Rahm with 4. Here's what Scheffler's peers are saying about this run of dominance.
He's got great hands. He's got every shot, and then at this point, you know, once he won last year and obviously won the Masters, I feel like his when you're presented with those shots, if you don't feel like you have house money, you play them a certain way. But if you feel like it doesn't matter, you're going to play the shot that could go closest, even if it means disaster could happen, you still sit there and go for it and pull it off, similar to how Phil Mickelson played most of his rounds. But I'm saying, I can't use examples of Scotty before he won. I'm not saying he didn't play that way. I can go off myself and saying that, you know, when I started to feel like a couple years out here and having some success, I started to just trust flop shots and stuff where instead of making sure you have a putt at it, you're like, no, I'm going to try and see this go in. And I feel like he's just playing like that. There's nothing to lose, everything to gain, and for him and and it's a really nice place to be where he's at. I've been there. And it's a really fun time playing golf that way when the ball does find the cup like that too.
He's one of those players that, because of how he swings and what have you, like some elements look untidy, but I just think he plays his game and he's a great putter, great short game, very creative, very imaginative. And I think since Teddy Scott came on the bag, they've got an awesome process out there. So, yeah, I mean... does he go back to world number one this week, does he, if he wins? Yeah, it's kind of cool to have that flip-flop in around with 3 great players at the moment, so it's good for golf.
In your
perspective,
everything.
I mean, he hits it long, he hits it high. He's going to be able to play any golf course. He lives in Dallas, I'm in Fort Worth, so he certainly knows how to handle the wind, as we're seeing here this week. But that's the biggest thing. There's no weaknesses, so he can go to any golf course and play well, kind of like he's done, for a few years now.
how would you describe the respect he has from the membership as a player?
I would say he's got a ton of respect. You know, his game speaks for itself, but just the guy that Scotty is, you know, very quiet, soft-spoken guy that, you know, is one of the nicest guys out here. So I enjoy that about him more than what he's doing on the golf course, I would say.
We're joined now by someone who's had a lot of up-close looks at Scotty Scheffler's success over the last couple of years, John Wood, our NBC colleague and former longtime caddy on the PGA Tour. John, what is the secret to Scotty Scheffler's success right now? You've watched him closely. You've seen him as a competitor closer than in closer quarters than any of us have. What is the weapon that's driving him right now?
I think he's got so much confidence in every part of his game right now that he's just not afraid to hit any shot. He's not a guy who goes out there and hits a stock shot every single time. He'll talk through it with Teddy. They'll come up with a plan. He hits it low. He hits it high. He plays with no fear right now. His short game is second to none. I don't know what the stats say, but his hands around the greens, his touch is so good. Similar to what Jordan was talking about a moment ago, that he's not afraid to hit any shot because he knows he can save it if he doesn't pull off the shot.
John, we've seen stretches in, say, the last 6-7 years where guys in the PGA Tour win 6-7 times in just over the span of a calendar year. Jordan Spieth did it, Jason Day, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson. Now, Scotty Scheffler, 6 wins in 13 months. Do you think his style of play and temperament has more staying power than maybe some of these other guys we've seen, or is this just an amazing run that's eventually going to fizzle out?
I mean, it's an amazing run, but I don't think it's going to fizzle out anytime soon. I think this is how good this guy is. I will say, it, no matter how well you're playing and how good you are as a player, it is hard to win out here. Scotty's making it look pretty easy right now, but a lot of times you play the same kind of golf and not necessarily come out with the W's. Somebody else might outplay it here and there. But Scotty Scheffler is just that guy who's outplaying everybody else right now. I don't think it's a hot streak anymore at this point. A hot streak to me is 6, 8, 10 weeks maybe. This is, you know, going on a year and a half, and he really hasn't had any low points. So I just think this is how good Scotty Scheffler is as a golfer.
John, Scotty looked surprised last night when he was told he just made $4.5 million. And that's a luxury the top guys have. We hear about it all the time that they don't really ever think of the money. A lot of guys a little farther down the pecking order do think of the money. And given what was at stake yesterday, are we entering an era now with these designated events where the paycheck and what's at stake with each swing on those last few holes is going to be more of a factor in guys' minds than maybe it might have been before?
Possibly. I think possibly for guys who are maybe trying to get into those designated events, knowing how much every shot, every point, every dollar might mean to get into them. The guys who are in them, I think it's going to encourage more win-at-all-cost mentality, in my mind. You know, you're in these events, you're out there, and I think the top, you know, 15, 20, 30 guys, when they get in position, they're going to go all out for the win, just because they know that they're going to be financially secure in these events. They were anyways. That's a stupid thing to say. But I think guys now even more are going to play for the trophy than they are for, you know, moving from sixth to fourth place.
When you look down the leaderboard past Scotty Scheffler, which player do you think will draw the most momentum from what they did at the Players?
Hard to overlook Tyrrell Hatton. The guy's such a talent. Everybody knows he's such a talent. His demeanor sometimes gets the headlines, but boy, the guy is so good. And when he's on, as he was yesterday, he's as good as anyone. I think it'll, you know, Max Homa's run will continue his, you know, his mentality that he's a world class player, you know, throughout the year. And he was, you know, to get in the mix when you start the day on Sunday, not really in the mix, is huge. So, but I think Tyrrell Hatton moving forward, I think he may be finally starting to realize how good he really is. And I think, you know, giving himself that much more credit, more confidence going out there, I think his game will start grabbing more headlines than some of the personality, you know, traits that he has.
It's been more than 20 years, John, since we've had a repeat winner at the Masters, only 3 in the tournament's history. Would you take that bet right now with Scotty Scheffler?
You know, in my mind, this Masters, it's going to be 10 co-favorites. I mean, Scotty's playing great right now, but a few weeks from now, who's to say Rory's not going to be playing this great? Or who's to say John Rahm might recapture, form from a couple weeks ago? Jordan, Justin, gosh, there are so many. Xander, Cantlay, there's just so many players in my mind that are right in that similar area. I'm a bad betting man anyway, so I wouldn't know who to bet on. But certainly you couldn't go wrong with Scottie Scheffler, but I think it's I think there's 15 guys who wouldn't surprise me one bit if they won the Masters.
You can see the hashtag fade wood now starting the trend if that's the case. We've been playing like musical chairs so far with world number one this season. Rory's had some time there, John Rahm, now Scottie. Any chance we'll see separation for a period of time this season, or is that the new norm through the rest of this year?
I think that's the new norm, and I don't think it's going to be limited to those three guys. I think you'll see, from 4 through 10, jumping up there. And right now, those three are at the top, and they're going to trade it back a little bit. But I think, by the end of the year, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if we saw 4, 5, 6 different number ones.
We heard from Todd
that level at the top right now.
We heard from Todd Lewis a little while ago, John, about the reaction to all of these changes happening in terms of the designated events and no cuts and the various structural changes at the PGA Tour. Todd obviously suggested there is some division out there in the locker room about how this has been interpreted. What was your reaction and what were you hearing among guys on the ground last week?
About what you'd expect. I think, that the top-tier players who are already qualified for those events are thrilled. Some of the others are not, but... the PGA Tour has always had a way when they do make adjustments or do make changes. Okay, this is year one. Let's see what happens 2, 3 years, like the FedEx Cup playoffs, like the world events. They developed, they evolved over years. So, this is the first iteration of this. Who's to say 2 years down the road they don't decide, okay, you know what, we need to go to bring back the cuts and go to 120-man fields. I think guys who are really honest with themselves and honest and fair about it are saying, play great golf and you're there. It's not on anybody else to get you into those events, but it's on you. Go play great golf. You're going to be in, period. There's not a coach that can keep you out. There's not a scout that can keep you out. Go play great golf and you're going to be in. I think that's I think most guys think like that.
John, appreciate you spending some time with us. Before you go, I want to say enjoyed the work last week and loved on Live From you inside the ropes with Webb Simpson. I thought that was a great breakdown.
He's great. He and Paul are awesome, and hopefully get a chance to do some more of that in the future.
Yeah, would love to see it, 100%.
Thanks, guys.
Well, Scottie Scheffler isn't the first fresh-faced Texan to take down the Players' Championship. Look at this cherubic face. That was Justin Leonard back in 1998, the former Players' Champion. He's coming up right after the break.
What a way to close out your week at the Players by making sure you had all four rounds in the 60s. All Scottie Scheffler over the weekend had the lead and expanded it from 2 to 5. The final tally as he wins the Players. Scheffler joining another list. That's of UT golfers who went on to win the Players. Tom Kite in 89, Justin Leonard 9 years later, and 25 years after Leonard's victory, Scottie Scheffler becomes the third Longhorn to win the PGA Tour's premier event. All right, speaking of Texans, let's flash back to 1998. Final round, Justin Leonard, par 3, 8, staring it down.
Two things you don't see much anymore on tour, George. One irons, pleated pants.
Leonard to within a couple feet. To the island green we go, par 3, 17th.
This is the killer instinct he showed coming back from 5 down to win the Open Championship less than a year earlier.
Yeah, remember Leonard won the 96 Buick, 97 won the Kemper in the Open, and then in 98, caps it off with a two-shot victory over, get this, Glenn Day and Tom Lehman. He was 10 under for the week. Final round, 67. You see the largest comebacks in Players history. Raymond Floyd, 6 in 1981. That was before they had moved it to the stadium course, 1982, first time they contested the players there. Justin Leonard, five back before winning. Now let's welcome in 12-time PGA Tour winner, 98 Players Champ, 97 Open Champ, Justin Leonard. Justin, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you, George. It's been a busy week here. Got moved, and I'm getting ready to go out to Newport for the Hogue Classic this week. So excited to get back out and play and get a better sense of where my game is.
Does 25 years ago we showed those 98 players highlights, is that blink of an eye, or what's the trip down memory lane like?
It feels like a long time ago, to be honest. I mean, some of the memories are very vivid. Others are a little bit fuzzier. My kids last night, as we watched the tournament finish up, heard Scottie Scheffler say, we're going to celebrate as a family, this and that. My kids are like, Dad, what did you do? I said, well, let's see. I did all the kind of media obligations and volunteer stuff, and I got on an airplane and flew home. They're like, oh, was Mom with you? I said, no, we hadn't met each other yet. Was anybody with you? No, I just – and then what'd you do? I said, I think I just kind of, like, unpacked and got cleaned up and went to sleep. I didn't have much of a celebration. But it's certainly worthy of a celebration, that's for sure, winning the Players' Championship.
There's something about Texans who just don't know how to party, George. But Justin, that final day in 98, you were five behind Lee Johnson going into the final round. He had a three-stroke lead over Glenn Day. By the time you got to that closing stretch of holes, Len Matisse was on the 17th tee and had something of a catastrophe there. Do you always have the mindset that no lead was safe for any leader on that golf course before you headed out that day?
Absolutely. With the swings that can happen on the back nine, there's certainly eagle opportunities. There's also opportunities for disaster. And until you reach the 18th green, nothing ever feels safe. As Len was playing 17, I was in group behind, and I had to lay up on 16. So I was kind of getting ready for my third shot. And I could hear, I wasn't really watching, but I could hear what was going on over on 17. I saw him hit it in the water and then saw that he hit his third shot, I guess, in the water. And at that point, I knew that I didn't need to do anything special. I just need to stay dry and try and make three pars on those last three holes.
For Scottie Scheffler, who won his first major last year, and then in saying winning the Players, he said the week kind of feels like a major just with the caliber of player that you're going up against. It was similar for you. You won the 97 Open, then you follow that up the next spring in winning the Players. What did the achievement of that week provide for you on the heels of having the claret jug?
For me, it was a little bit of like backing up my major championship. Scottie Scheffler, he's reached number one in the world. He's number one in the world again. I don't think anybody, he didn't need to validate anything. But for me, the Open Championship was my third victory. But to turn around the next year and win the Players, I felt like I did need to validate it a little bit. And then just being able to go back for so many years as a Players champion, it's very special. It's a great venue. It doesn't really... The only thing it really favors is whoever's playing the best. There's no real style of play, I think, that, complements the golf course. It's just, it's a great test. It lets you know exactly where you stand. And as we talked about, the pressure coming down the stretch, trying to win that tournament, it is major championship level pressure, that's for sure.
Justin, we can see that claret jug just over your left shoulder there from Royal Troon in 1997. You were five behind heading into the final round that day as well, as you were at the Players the following year. In those kind of pressure environments, is there something to be said for being the chaser rather than the guy who was, as Scottie Scheffler was yesterday, trying to hold on to that lead?
Eamon, I was always more comfortable chasing. Only one time in my career did I have, well, a couple times really, but one time in my career I had a big lead, and it was the most uncomfortable round I ever played. It was in Memphis at the FedEx St. Jude. I think I had a 5 or 6 shot lead. I ended up only winning by a stroke. I much prefer coming behind. And the real key, if you are coming behind, is that you don't have to pass a lot of people. Both times at the Open, at the Players, when I was five back, I was in the next to last group. So I only had two players ahead of me. And certainly that's much easier to to overcome than being five shots back but having 20 players out in front. So it was a good situation for me in that I had to be aggressive and attack the golf course in both cases. And in both cases, I got off to a good start and then played really well through the middle of the round. You know, a little bit like Scotty did, but his was more separating himself, where I was still just trying to catch the leaders with that stretch.
With the win, Scotty Scheffler has six PGA Tour wins his last 13 months. As you look at the young American stars that are, say, under 30, with Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, they're already basically rubber stamped as Hall of Famers with what they've done so far. And then you have the next tier, say, Patrick Cantlay, Colin Morikawa, and you throw Scotty Scheffler in the mix. Do you think Scheffler could emerge from the pack, or are we going to see a lot of these guys who kind of carry the mantle with incredible stretches like this that are hard to sustain beyond a year or two?
I don't think anybody really – these top players are so good. It's really hard to really gain a lot of separation over such world-class players. I think this is a – the game is in such a great state right now with so many great storylines. Not only at these elevated events where we've seen, you know, John Rahm won a couple, now Scotty Scheffler, but even thinking back to the Honda Classic and the great story of Eric Cole, you know, battling down the stretch with Chris Kirk. The tour's in a great place. And yes, there's a lot of change going on right now. But even though there's those events where maybe most of the best players aren't there, it's still compelling golf week in, week out. And, you know, it's fun to be now a fan of the PGA Tour and not playing it and competing against those guys. But it's certainly exciting to watch.
Well, the rewards have changed a lot as well, Justin. When you won the Players 25 years ago, you got a check for $720,000. Yesterday, Scotty Scheffler got one for $4.5 million. What do you think now when you see this, A, the scale of reward that's out there on the PGA Tour, but also the schedule changes that's happening now with designated events? Are you a fan of what you see?
I don't really know yet whether I'm a fan or not. I think I am, because the best players in the world are going to play together more often. Say, if you go back 8 to 10 years ago, it was the major championships, the WGCs, which are no longer in existence, and maybe a couple others like Bay Hill and Memorial. And now we're going to get to see the best players in the game playing together much more often. But I also have an eye on those fields that aren't designated, that, yes, they've got the great storylines, but, you know, can those sponsors and communities continue to provide all that they do charitable-wise, even when they don't have some of the best players in the world? And these designated events, especially next year, I think, you know, there's going to be 15 or 18 of them. So the top players really aren't going to play many of the other events, if any at all. And so I hope and feel for those tournaments that maybe aren't in that upper echelon, because every week on tour is special. It may not have the best feel, but the impact that they have on their community and the charitable contributions, every week is important. And so I just hope that those tournaments are able to find ways to continue pushing forward and you know, thinking outside the box on how they can still have that same effect on their communities.
I know you're in the early stages now of your first full season on the PGA Tour Champions, and you want to add to that trophy wall behind you out there. And you're showing some positive signs early, a couple of top tens in your first three starts. What are you expecting of yourself this year?
I expect to win. I feel like I've got a good sense of where my game is. I'm learning things each and every week, whether it's, you know, the first week I showed up at the Mitsubishi Electric in Hualalai, and I was exhausted. I think I'd taken like 3 or 4 days off in the previous 3 months, and I kind of overtrained, and my mindset was, well, I took 6 years off. I don't have the opportunity or the leisure to take a day off. And so I was exhausted there, so I kind of rethought my preparation and practice during the week. Naples, I showed up pretty ready to play and felt good about things. Couple things in the second round I wasn't very pleased with. And then Tucson, I started out with kind of a bad attitude on Friday about, you know, the weather we'd had and some of the course conditions. And then you know, kind of sucked it up and played well on the weekend. So, you know, Eamon, you is my, I'd say mental coach is a little strong, but maybe mental consultant. You know, you and I need to get together and talk some things over, but I just want you to know I'm taking notes. I'm learning the little lessons, and I don't mind making mistakes as long as I don't make the same mistake twice.
Well, you should know that my rate is about to go up, Justin, if you do win.
Oh, you know what? That's okay, because I'm not paying you very much right now anyways.
So what, as mental coach, what are your words of wisdom for Justin this week?
Well, that's proprietary information. I'm just trying to callous the mind. I'm trying to toughen him up a little bit before he gets out there. But apparently it didn't work in the first round at Tucson with his bad attitude.
Well, he recovered the final 36. Justin, thanks for the time. Amazing that you've been able to overcome whatever insight that Eamon Lynch has shared with you. And best of luck at the Hogue Classic.
Thank you, George. I look forward to the challenge of continuing my work with Eamon. And as you know, his approach is very much outside the box, and it, I find it fascinating.
Never a dull moment. Thanks, Justin.
Thank you.
There's a theory that, that everything else going on, schedules, board meetings, talking about all this stuff, is taking quite a lot out of you. What do you make of that? Is that maybe fair?
Yeah, it is fair. I'd love to get back to being a golfer, yeah. Yeah, look, it's been a busy couple of weeks, and it's been a, you know, it's honestly, it's been a busy sort of 6 or 8 months. So, but as I said at the start of the week, you know, everything's sort of been announced now, and it's, you know, the wheels have been put in motion. So, you know, it should obviously quieten down from here.
How hard has it been to focus on just being a golfer with all that?
I mean, it's just more the, you know, it's just the time management, and it's, you know, just making sure the, you know, the golf like out here is not, that's fine, but it's just more the time at home to make sure you're getting prepared, to make sure that you're doing everything you can to be ready once you show up to these weeks. That's the, you know, that's where, yeah, I've maybe sacrificed a little bit of time with some of this other stuff, but, you know, as I said, I'm ready to get back to being purely a golfer.
With one start before Augusta, what's atop your priority list?
Just making sure my game's in shape for Augusta. Making sure that I've got all the shots, making sure that, you know, I'm familiarize myself with the golf course again and go up there for a couple of days. And but yeah, from now all the way until the start of April, it's really just all about getting ready for Augusta.
Rory hadn't had a weekend off since entering an event on the PGA Tour quite some time. I mentioned the 76-73 negative strokes gained in each and every category, and that's why it's his first missed cut since the FedEx St. Jude Championship, August of 2022.
Well, all of those changes to the PGA Tour that Rory McIlroy has been involved in were finally announced in the last couple of weeks. When we come back, we'll take a look at whether it's good for the tour, good for fans, or if it's just good for a small group of the top players. Stay with us.
The subplot to the Players last week, aside from the performance from Scottie Scheffler, this before the start of the tournament, the PGA Tour designated events and changes going into 2024. Select field, 70 to 80 players with no cut, no mandatory participation. Top 50 from previous season's BMW Championship qualify. Opportunities to advance to designated events through FedEx Cup points and tournament victories. PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan weighing in.
Our 2024 schedule will look significantly different with a consistent cadence of designated and full field events. Within this framework, those players who qualify for these designated events will be able to better complement their schedules through full field events as they return to favorite venues, support their home markets, and solidify positions at the start of the season, as well as in advance of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Will this model be perfect right out of the gate? Perhaps not. But as we've done throughout our history, and using the FedEx Cup as a prime example, we will listen, we will learn, and we will adapt each year with the changing needs of our players, partners, and fans.
Is there a time frame on when you'll have this schedule completed?
I gave you guys a time frame last year.
at the Tour Championship, I'm not doing that again. I think the time frame is, if you look at when we traditionally announce our schedule, which is mid to late summer, that's when we'll likely announce our schedule for 2024. Right. And we also, but I will say that we have not announced our fall schedule, and I would expect you all to have that in the coming weeks.
You think the changes are a step in the right direction?
There are certainly a reflection of what the real shift is we're seeing here, George, which is the power dynamic on the PGA Tour, which has been a painfully democratic organisation its entire existence, with one mandate given to the commissioner every time, regardless of who it is, which is playing opportunities for members. What you're seeing now is that this bus has been driven by a very small group of guys, and they're deciding where it's going. They are deciding how many seats are on that bus in terms of field sizes, and they're deciding if anyone's getting off before the end of the journey with whether or not we have cuts. That's really, I think, what rankles a lot of guys out there is, are you in the group that's sitting at the front of that bus determining where it's going, or are you the guys who are on it by their good graces?
At the end of the day, what's most important are the people watching at home. Is the product improved? Is this a better watch for the average fan week to week? The designated events have been a home run so far. To see the best in the game all at the same place, providing what have been thrilling finishes and amazing leaderboards, is phenomenal for the PGA Tour fan. I'm curious how it's going to shake out, though, with no cut events, 70 to 80 person fields. When you reflect on the best events from the previous season, it's rare that WGCs were thrown in the mix. They haven't provided the same type of theater that we see at a full field event. So that would be my pause for concern. And there's four or five different variables the PGA Tour is changing, so it's hard to really assess what the product's going to be like until we see it. And I understand the argument, Max Homa laid it out, that you need players, say, 75 to 125 playing on non-designated weeks to give more of a strength of field over the totality of the PGA Tour schedule. It's just there's a feeling of sterility when you don't have a cut and it's a smaller 70 to 80 man field.
And those WGCs should be something of a warning sign here. And they did have weaker fields than the designated events are going to have. But the absence of a cut, to me, it's not so much the cut that's the issue. It's you have to be measured against the field that you're playing that week. The rewards have to stop at a certain point. Personally, I'd like to see them stop giving FedEx Cup points after 50th place in a 70 or 80 man tournament. I had a conversation with Aaron Hoberholzer a couple of weeks ago at Bay Hill, and he said when he was in the top 50 and playing the WGCs, if he had a top 10, a top 20 in those events, that was enough to keep him in that ecosystem for the next year, even if he was having a fairly substandard year otherwise. And I think that's something the Tour has to be aware of, the churn. You can't let this become a self-fulfilling prophecy here with this ecosystem. You have to be able to play your way out of it a little more easily too.
And churn was a big selling point on what the initial proposal was with 40 or 50 man fields to then 70 or 80 to have more of that going forward, so you don't have people on the bottom 20% who just have one good week and are able to stay in that ecosystem, as you said. And we're sticking with Scottie Scheffler. The best thing we saw, and this was popping up on the broadcast on NBC over the weekend, his grandma, Mary, 88 years old, walked every single hole with her grandson en route to his victory at the Players.
How are you going to celebrate tonight?
Good question. I don't know what time it is. My daylight savings got me all flustered. It might be. What time is it?
7:17.
I don't know. Maybe grandma's got some food at home. I know she has some dessert. And so, we'll see. We'll see what's in store.
I would hope, Paige, that Scottie Scheffler spoiled himself with the nice dessert after the victory.
Yeah, you get seconds now, you know, if you go win the Players. But I think that also highlights the importance. When these players win massive events, the people that they want beside them are the ones that saw them with the cameras weren't there. And the fact that he had so many of his family there to celebrate, and they've been through all of his journey from childhood to get to this point, pretty special.
Yeah, I think today we've got a pretty good look at what the ecosystem's like around Scottie Scheffler, from the coach to the caddy to grandma. It gives you a sense of how he goes about his business. These are all people who are very comfortable in their own skin, and it explains why he doesn't have many distractions in life. He doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. you know, it's a warning sign to a lot of guys that if everything is well outside the ropes, it can translate inside.
It's rare for a guy in the PGA Tour to get to celebrate a win with the people that matter most to him. Justin Leonard talked about winning the Players 25 years ago, and he said, I just flew home by myself. For Scottie Scheffler to have this moment and share it with his wife, his parents, his grandma, and now he's once again at world number one, it seems like the sky's the limit for Scottie Scheffler. Has two wins, his last four starts, and now heads back to Austin, where he went to college at the University of Texas to try and defend the Dell Technologies match play. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.